That's, yeah, he's doesn't like in a world where Wernher von Braun never came over to the United States, the secret weapon is actually just Jack Reacher throwing the missiles.
Yeah, he's doing the caber toss with the Doodleburg V2 rocket.
You know what else is a V2 rocket?
Oh my God, what?
Hey everybody, welcome back to Pixlet. My name is Kevin, and with me on today's episode, while Phil is out on his baby leave, is James from Hot Cider Channel.
Hello,
gaming place. James, aka gaming, Hot Cider. Gaming's Hot
gaming,
Cider.
Gaming, some podcasting sometimes. Kevin, obviously.
James from Bullet Time.
Yeah. I've been on this podcast a couple of times now. So this is my third appearance. So I was on
third time.
Godzilla King of the Monsters for Halloween.
That's right.
I was on Wars of Power, Bionic Commando. And then today as well. When do I get my challenge? Is it like Saturday Night Live? Do I have to be on this
where
five
you get
times
a jacket?
To get my challenge? Yeah, exactly.
I think it's five times. So okay. I think you and I feel like it's you and Jesse Gracia. Are like you're neck and neck as to who's gonna get to five first. All right.
So yeah, like who in that component? Who's Steve Martin and who's Martin Short? Like out of that, like who's gonna get to the five first?
Yeah, I'll leave that between you and Jesse to see who would be that.
I mean, Martin Short is a Canuck, isn't he? So that would feel like it's a better fit for Jesse. I mean, granted, I'm not a Yank, so like Steve Martin wouldn't be much of a fit
Steve,
for me.
Where is Steve Martin from? He is from Texas. Okay.
Seems like the least Texan guy I can think of.
I feel like he did not spend a lot. He couldn't have spent a lot of time there because, he started really young. In terms of
he's
being
like
a performer.
He has like he exudes New England WASP. Like that is I couldn't imagine that man in a I could imagine that guy in a cowboy hat, and I am laughing because I go, oh, you shouldn't be wearing a cowboy hat, that's ill fitting. But no, apparently it's not. Apparently that is exactly the attire that he should be wearing. But
You couldn't imagine it until you remember Three Amigos.
Oh, well, here's the thing, Kevin. I haven't seen Three Amigos. When I think of Three Amigos, I think of the cartoon where it's Donald Duck and the parrot.
Oh,
and
the three
bird.
Caballeros.
The three Caballeros. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Donald Duck and the two
the other ones.
The other ones who only appear in the three Caballeros cartoons.
Do you think they ever feel jealousy if just like Donald Duck can just go home and have like a normal life and do his own stuff, whereas
they
can only ever be part of the three Caballeros?
I'm pretty sure that there's probably been some backrooms dealings and some talks of disrespect. Here's the real thing is Donald Duck did not vote for the strike authorization, but the other two Caballeros did.
did Donald scab during the
Donald? His daddy's Walt Disney, of course.
I don't know how I feel about that. Like, I don't know. Donald, I respected him, but now I know that. I bet he was pushing for the AI stuff as well. He was like, look, once the AI can do my voice, I'm fine with that. But
yeah, he's been looking for a reason to retire for years.
Yeah.
Because he's animated, he always stays young. This would just give him an out, and He was really pulling for it, but I don't know. We'll see.
I'm just laughing at the idea of Sam Altman, like, you know, Donald's on the phone and he's like, have you got the voice done yet? And he's like, well, I can do natural voices for like other people, but Don, like, your voice is like, I can't, like,
it's impossible.
The level of technology is not there yet for Donald Duck. Like, I don't even know what you're saying to me right now. This is like too much.
This is why Sam Altman got fired, actually.
Was Don the one who put the phone? He was the one who rang the board and he was like, get him out. He's a liability. Get him
Donald
out.
Donald Duck was the one who rang up the board and was like, listen, this clown has to go.
Yeah, he's talking about ethics, blah, blah, blah. Get him out. He rang up Musk and he said, put pressure on. You know what, Musk? You know what to do? Put pressure on. Get him out.
Oh boy. Gosh. So we're not here to talk about Donald Duck, though. We're here to talk about Mario, and the incredible rescue.
A character who famously, wasn't there a thing like back in the 90s where they did a poll and Super Mario was a more recognizable character to children than Mickey Mouse, right?
Yeah, it was either Super Mario or Sonic.
Oh, yeah. I think it's Super Mario, because I think like that was the whole reason that Sonic was invented, is because like Sega were like, oh god, Mario's like massive. Why haven't we got a guy?
Mario is massive, yeah.
Mario is famously massive. Yeah, which is obviously why he's got so many books, such as the one that we're looking at today, which of course is
such as
Mario in the Incredible Rescue. Now, Kevin, do you know any... did you look up anything about this book? Before,
yeah, I looked up the author. The author, her name is Tracy West, and there's not much out there other than she's from New Jersey and she's a children's book author. And she's written for Pokemon, SpongeBob SquarePants, Teen Titans, and the Powerpuff Girls. Yeah. And she also did the novelization of the film Penguins of Madagascar,
which won her a Scribe Award for the International Association of Media Tie-In Writers. Now, I gotta ask, I feel like that, like, for Pixel, like that's just where you should be looking, like, every year. Like,
yeah.
Okay, these are our guys, like, what's winning awards here? Because, yeah, I had a quick... I decided to look them up very quickly to see, like... So, they're still about, mostly moved over to Facebook now. The website hasn't been updated in a while, except they did do the Scribe winners for this year.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Clancy, funnily enough, video game related, won for best audio drama and for best general novel.
Clancy's Splinter Cell. Yeah,
Splinter Cell Firewall, which I believe a friend of ours has covered. Right?
Ashley from Game. Yeah. What's her channel name? Game Library. Covered it at some point last year, I believe.
Well, it must be good if it won an award, if it won a Scribe from the International Association of Media Tie-In Writers, or IAMTWI, if to give them their acronym name. Not quite IATSE, but...
You know. Not quite an IATSE, which, you know, IAMTWI.
IAMTWI.
Graphic novels, short story... Oh wow, they got a whole thing. It's wild though. That a video game novelization won the award. I'm gonna have to keep an eye on that for future episodes.
I think you should
get
them on the pod and be like, look, we do game tie-ins. Let's collaborate a little bit.
I should get all of IAMTW on the pod at once.
Yeah, exactly. I was thinking more just like you push them to do an actual in-person event so you can go there dickied up, like handing out the awards. That'd be pretty good.
I think that would be good.
Mention with Mario and the Incredible Rescue, the Nintendo book. Now, I have a feeling why I know why you asked me on to have a look at this, and we'll get to that in a bit. But one thing you did mention about this is that it does come with stickers. Now, unfortunately, the version you sent me, which was an EPUB, did not have any stickers in them.
Does not have stickers, no. I do wish I had eBayed a copy with stickers to send you, but that's on me. That's my bad.
Now
I'm sure you can print
absolutely
out.
Fine. You'd be well. It's even better than that. So the Super Mario Wiki, as expected, does have the book fully detailed out. But not only that,
of course,
they do have pictures of the sticker sheets, and they even tell you every single game that the renders are taken from. Because I would like to describe, by the way, for the people at home who, you know, I'm not sure if this will be the episode art or whatever, but the cover of Nintendo Heroes Mario and the Incredible Rescue by Tracy West is a picture of Mario jumping, Luigi on a mushroom, and two ghosts. Now, these renders are from 10 years of Mario game. Like, there is no consistency between them.
Yeah, the two ghosts are completely different renders.
Yeah, so Super Mario is a render from Super Mario 64 from the manual. What the ghost in the back is a ghost render from Super Mario 64. The one in front of it with his tongue out is from Luigi's Mansion. And then Luigi himself is from Mario Party 4 for the GameCube. So two completely different generations of consoles. Which I feel is a good summation of this book, which is written in 2006 And yet all of its Mario touchstones are from a decade prior, 1996, which is, I guess we'll tap on that when we get to it. But yeah, I think, I don't know whether it was Tracy, like what information that she had, or whether it was Scholastic, well, I use the Mario Bible. Yeah. We haven't updated it in a while, but don't worry about it kind of thing.
Yeah, it feels like, if I was to guess, wildly speculate, is that Scholastic goes to Nintendo. Like, an editor at Scholastic goes to Nintendo and is like, hey, we want to do Nintendo, like a Nintendo Heroes series. We're going to have Mario. Yeah. All right. They're like, and Scholastic is going to Nintendo of America, I'm thinking. Nintendo of America is like, yeah, sure, sign over the contract. Sounds great. Here's the rules you got to follow for what Mario can and can't do, and here's like a folder of graphics you can use.
Here's our sticker sheet to you.
Enjoy. Here's our sticker sheet. Just slap some shit together.
They literally just put him on like whoever was from Scholastic. He had a briefcase, and like somebody from Nintendo was just like putting them on, and like the Scholastic person was like, can you please stop doing it? And the Nintendo person just kept doing it, just kept putting stickers on the briefcase.
Yep. How it went.
That's exactly how it
and
went.
And then a poor Scholastic graphic designer just slapped this cover together and called it a day. Just grabbed the first few that he saw.
Exactly. Took a green mushroom from Super Mario 64's render book, but then for the rest of the book used mushroom renders from New Super Mario Brothers. So
do you know what Nintendo was using for their, what they would have been using for their renders back in 1996? Would it have been like an SGI or something like that?
So all the Super Mario 64 renders were done on a SGI Onyx, I believe, which I think is very close to what they built Doom on. Doom was built on an NXT, but but the SGI Onyx is like, they use them for all sort, like Softimage and Maya could run on that sort of stuff. So
right. Like, it's like the same computers they would have done like Jurassic Park on.
The Liquid guy in T2, I think, was all done on Onyxes as well. Phantom Menace, I think, was also done on Onyxes as well. And then they decided, can we try and make these smaller and make them run quick? And they're like, okay. If you want,
fine.
Sure. Twist my arm, why don't you? But
there's a really funny bit in Jack Reacher. By the way, we were talking about Jack Reacher before the show started. What's his name? The guy who played the cop in Terminator 2.
Robert Patrick.
Yeah, Robert Patrick. He's like the bad guy in season 2 of Jack Reacher. And this goon calls him up and he's like, they checked in under the hotel name. And he says, it's the first name is a guy and it's a reference to some movie. He's like, Reacher and the girl checked in under so-and-so and Sarah Connor. And he goes, what the fuck does that mean? And then the guy on Robert Patrick is like, I don't give a fuck who Sarah Connor is.
That's pretty good.
I was like, just the meta level of that joke is chef's kiss.
Okay. I always think of the one in Wayne's World where he stops the car and he holds up just the of a random kid and said, have you seen this child?
Yeah. I love it. Love it when Robert Patrick appears in things.
He was good in, what's it called? Peacemaker, which he plays John Cena's dad in that.
Yeah, the white supremacist villain in Peacemaker. then I remembered out of nowhere that he was the replacement for David Duchovny in The X-Files.
During the season where Gillian Anderson went off pregnant
like Gillian Anderson and David and Robert Patrick, and then Gillian Anderson left. And it was Robert Patrick, and it's weird. X-Files went on much longer than people remember it did without.
Yeah, and then it came back twice. And people went, oh, no, we came back once. It was like, no, it came back twice. And it had like 3 films as well.
Yes. Like, yeah. There's more X-Files than you think, and multiple games.
Some would say too much X-Files.
Some might say too much X-Files, but if you carve it out right, you have just enough X-Files.
That's true. And if it wasn't for the X-Files, we wouldn't have got Breaking Bad. So
we would not have gotten Breaking Bad, would we? And we also wouldn't have gotten Nintendo Heroes Mario and the Incredible Rescue.
That's true.
We're gonna put this body in the marsh.
That's gonna be a big fucking dog, man.
Let's see here. We're gonna start off with chapter one.
Absolutely.
So chapter one.
I made a couple of notes with these as well, which mostly just the fact that when Mario talks and stuff, I just find it incredibly weird.
It's very off-putting.
Mario should just be somebody who grunts, and yet, no, like, in this, he's saying four sentences, like, Mario took a deep breath of fresh air and said, nothing. Absolutely nothing. The Mushroom Kingdom is safe. Nothing is causing any trouble. Princess Peach is safe in her castle. For once, you and I can just relax, okay? Like, I guess I can sort of hear Chris Pratt's Mario say, I mean, I was gonna say, so is this,
It's more like Ron Livingston, like... I think it was like Ron Livingston's character from Office Space is what they were channeling here.
Yeah, that's what I'm sort of feeling as well. I was going to say, do you think this is going to be the Bible for the second Mario movie? It's like, oh, fuck, what do we do for that? Hold on, Tracy West, she sent something in. Mario and the Incredible Rescue, got it, saw it, but put it into production.
I wouldn't be surprised. It has a pretty, like... You know, we got to go, instead of like, we got to go get the MacGuffin, we got to go find six MacGuffins.
Let's get to the six MacGuffins then, which is basically just so, to kind of summarize the first few pages, it is just they're chilling, and then in classic Mario fashion, Princess Peach gets kidnapped. That's usually the thing.
Kidnapped by a bunch of ghosts.
Yeah, she does. Yeah, so ghosts are involved, so... So Toad comes running in. He says, I need your help. Luigi cries, oh no. I marked down Mario saying, calm down, Toad. Which I just, in Mario's voice, I just find very... It's just Mario being condescending, being like, Toad, calm down, please.
like everything else is in the Charles Martinet voice somehow. And then he breaks character... To just say, calm down, Toad.
I was thinking of, have you ever seen the classic YouTube like video where it's the like Nintendo sex ed video or whatever it is? And it's Mario speaking in the Captain Lou Albano, oh, spaghetti kind of voice. But then he's like, here comes my brother, Luigi. Hello, Mario. And like Luigi just has like a completely waspy, like white American guy voice to explain... So that's what I imagine Mario sounds like in this book, is that he sounds just like, just a very normal Anglo.
Very Anglo.
While Luigi's doing pizza pasta, Mamma Mia, and Toad's got the really screechy-ass voice.
Mario! Oh no, Mario! She's been captured by ghosts!
Ghosts.
Ghosts, they really Scooby-Doo the crap out of those ghosts. Both Luigi and, which is just a slight criticism, Luigi and Toad are both afraid of the ghosts. I feel like that weakens the overcoming moments that were due of them overcoming their fear. I don't know.
And again, this was written in 2000, well, this was published in 2006, so let's assume it was written in 2005 at the earliest.
Right.
Luigi's Mansion has come out at this point. Luigi shouldn't be surprised at the existence of ghosts.
No, he shouldn't.
Like he knows what ghosts are. I mean, he's also in Super Mario World, technically, if you play it in two players as well. There are multiple ghost houses in that game.
Of all the characters in the Super Mario canon, Luigi is the only one who is a part-time Ghostbuster.
That's true. Yeah, like Ernie Hudson famously said, "If there's a steady paycheck in, I'll believe anything
you say." Yeah,
okay, yeah. Luigi famously also said exactly the same thing, in his nasally voice.
He said that to Miyamoto when Miyamoto was saying, "Luigi, we're having trouble fitting you into some games." Luigi's response was, "If there's a steady paycheck in it, I'll be in any game you want."
For some reason, Luigi also had Ernie Hudson's voice for some odd reason.
For some odd reason. People didn't realize this. Ernie Hudson was the voice of Luigi.
All along. Oh, gosh.
So that's chapter one.
So this is great. I love it when you ask me on Pixel Lit, because it's like, oh, here's a kid's book. It's 46 pages, but finish it up. Now, I do always struggle with reading anyways, but yeah, I did manage to blow through this. But yeah, all you got to know in chapter one is peaceful, no longer peaceful. Toad comes in. Mario says for them to calm down. They're all scared, but Mario's like, no problem. We've saved Princess Peach from Bowser.
We're going to do it.
Yeah.
Let's go straight to Bowser's Keep. They're going to take a shortcut in chapter two. They go through a warp pipe to the Karo's sewers.
Yes, which is when I started to realize I think I know what source material that Tracy's pulling all this from, but that will be confirmed properly in chapter number three, so I'll hang on tight. But
hang on
also,
to that.
Very much like Super Mario Brothers, first level is in the overworld, second level, you go underground into a pipe. And where are we going in chapter two? Into a pipe.
We're into a pipe. And we're in that pipe, and they're bopping some Goombas who are in the way. They run into an army of Goombas, though. They go the other direction. They run away from the Goombas, and then they do. They kick down a brick wall, which is
they do. I forgot about them kicking down it. Mario ran as far and as fast as he could, and then he came to a screeching halt. The tunnel was brought by a brick wall. What do we do now, Mario? We kick.
We do what Mario is known for, kicking.
You know, Mario's, he's very good at punching bricks, you know, straight up, but he's also very good at just solidly just kicking walls, like doing just a standing kick into a wall.
You know, Shawn Michaels got the inspiration for the sweet chin music was actually from Mario, famously.
Oh, I see. I was thinking that the motion of it is like when Bart Simpson's like, I'm going to start kicking the air, and if you get in the way, it's your own fault. Just a very solid can start kicking to the air. I will say, though, something interesting from that brick wall, which I did make mention of, is that a gold coin is produced, to which Luigi says nice, grabs it and stuffs it into his pocket. Now, I've never thought about that in the Mario games of the...
Right.
Where do the coins go?
Yeah.
And in this case, it turns... Because they don't just turn into the ether, which is what I assumed. No, like, he has a physical pocket for the coins. That thing's going to get pretty stuffed, I would have thought.
Yeah, they got to have some sort of... I mean, Mushroom Kingdom physics... Just everything I've learned about the Mushroom Kingdom through the games, through the obviously very canon books and movies, is that all pockets are bags of holding in the Mushroom Kingdom. So after they kick the crap out of that brick wall, they go through the brick tunnel, and now they're in a spooky forest. And when they turn around, the brick wall, the exits that they just came through is now gone.
Mario blinked. They had just crawled through a brick tunnel, right? But there was no sign of the tunnel or wall anywhere. I made a note of this because when I read through this the first time, I made this funny note, and I don't quite get it, but it was like, why is the author asking for confirmation here? I think it's because, as it's written, they just crawled through a brick tunnel, right? And I guess maybe in my head I was like, why are you asking this? You're the person who wrote the book. Why are you asking me for confirmation?
Right?
You should know.
And I'm like, yeah, I guess so.
George R. R. Martin should do that, where it's like just the next Song of Ice and Fire book is just like, this character was dead. At least I'm pretty sure they were. Is that right?
Is that right?
If they're dead or not?
And can you go back like in the old book? I don't.
Oh, yeah,
read the old books.
Oh, I was going to say, it's like a fighting fantasy book, and it's like, if you think this character is dead, keep reading. If you don't think they're dead, go to page 40. I've changed the plot.
That's really what's taking so long, is that the next book is a Choose Your Own Adventure.
Oh, hell yeah.
That's going to total like 9,000 pages.
I'm fine. I'm good with that. I think they should bring those back, and you know, if Georgie Boy is going to be the one to do it, by all means. But yeah, they're in a They're in a forest, though, and this is when we're introduced to one of the few female characters in the Mario canon who isn't a princess. Granted, this isn't a character that's actually in any of the games. I did double check.
Yeah, she's her name is Cybele or Cybele.
Sybil or something.
Sybil. The name is the Roman equivalent of the Greek goddess Rhea, the wife of Cronus and the mother of Zeus.
Interesting. Okay, so this is a pretty smart reference then, by the sounds of things. I did make a note about this because there's a line, he knocked on the door. Come in, a woman's voice came from inside. That doesn't sound like a ghost, Luigi said cautiously. Ergo, Luigi confirming that ghosts can't be women.
It's only men then.
Yeah, I guess all men are ghosts, and all ghosts are men in the Mario universe. So there we go.
Yeah. Cybele was there when Cronus was eating his kids? Do you think he was watching?
Don't eat them all at once, dear. You'll get a tummy ache. Don't eat them all at once. Yeah.
Got you some Pepto. It's in the cabinet.
Got you some Pepto. Oh, me the best, my growing boy. Another growing boy.
She tells them how to deal with the ghosts, which is get the 6 magic mushrooms and cast a spell. And everybody else leaves, and she's like, wait, Mario, I got one more thing for you. And she gives him an envelope.
Yes.
And she's, don't open until there's no hope left. And he's like, okay.
What does that mean, though? What does that mean when there is no hope left? That's pretty hardcore thing to say.
Pretty bleak. Bleak for a Mario movie. Or book, or whatever.
I mean, this could be the Mario movie too. That's what I'm thinking. If you think of this in Chris Pratt's voice, that's who it is. I would say I did make a note earlier on.
Prince Pratt's voice.
It is Prince Pratt's voice. Yeah, I did make a note earlier on where she was like, "I can help you defeat ghosts and save Princess Peach, but it will cost you." Like, she does actually like this is a really serious situation, but I want to get paid from it. And Luigi gives her the gold coin that he found in the tunnel. And that's like good enough. Not particularly heroic. I mean, I guess I can see why she got ostracized to the forest for being a witch. If she's like, you know.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a trend of weaving capitalist propaganda within the works of children's literature.
And Mario.
And Mario, clearly.
Oh, dear.
That people, when they are turned into bricks, as is canon in the Mario world,
true.
It's okay to destroy them now that they are bricks to get gold out of them. Let's just say Marx would have had a field day with Super Mario Brothers.
And to just think, there is an enemy, one of the bosses in Kirby Superstar is literally called Marx. What are Nintendo saying with that?
What is Nintendo saying? Do they know? What are they cooking?
What are they cooking? who let this man cook?
The first clue is in the Kiro Sewers.
Chapter 3, yeah.
In chapter 3, the first clue is Kiro Sewers. It's written backwards on the clue that they gave. And they're like, I figured it out. And there's a warp pipe nearby, and they hop down the pipe. And as they're walking, they got to dodge piranha plants. There's piranha plants all over the place. And they're moving and grooving, and they get to a ravine. And it's one of those things where they got to time the jumps because there's 4 pipes, and they're ascending. But the piranha plants are coming up at different timings, and if your timing is wrong, you're going to get bit.
So you're going to be plant food. You don't want
that.
You're going
to plant food.
I want to say, by the way, for the folks at home, so right at the beginning of the chapter, they give you this puzzle, which is, as Kevin said, it is Kerasu is written backwards. They literally give you the solution to this.
Go backward for the answer. Lineup.
They have absolutely no hope that a child will ever figure this out. And I will say, there are some puzzles, quote-unquote, later on, which are so kind of obscure that, yeah, like, of course you would give the answer immediately after that. But, I just thought I was a bit of a funny one, really. But, yeah.
Puzzles are basically like children's show puzzles where it's like Dora the Explorer looks at the audience and says, "Can you solve the puzzle?"
And then waits like 20 seconds.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas with this, you know, I wouldn't have minded like a, you know, I'm 32. I wouldn't have minded something a little bit more challenging, but you know, you can't hope for everything, really. I will say as well, I also made a note of then something dark and sparkly caught his eye. A black mushroom glittered in the distance. "That's it," Mario cried. He ran towards the mushroom and stopped just in time. I always cry as a synonym for say or said, I always find kind of weird, because when I just hear the word cry, I just think like tears spraying out,
right,
kind of thing.
Yeah.
Just as a term for, like, yeah, as a synonym for saying something, I don't know, I just
want
to find a little bit.
Mario cried. I understand why in On Writing by Stephen King, Stephen King was like, just don't use anything else other than said. Just put said and that's it. You don't have to write anything else.
You know, I've read On Writing, but I don't think I ever got that far. But that is like such a perfect Stephen King thing of like, yeah, I'm just sitting here and I'm just writing this whole thing out. I'm just going to use said for everything. Who cares? That's what you need to know.
Yeah, like Stephen, if you're... He's written like 5 books this year, probably. So,
And the rest, yeah. Stephen King's great. Like the story that he tells about, like, he got the idea for Carrie from his wife talking about like being a teenager and like what happened.
Yeah,
but also him like helping like paint somebody's house, going in and just like this terrifying crucifix of Jesus up on the wall, and she being like, "What do you think of that? Have you been saved, Stephen?" And him just being like, "God, who would want to be saved by that guy?" Like, he's in agony. And then he was like, this gives me an idea for a fun book. What if somebody had psychic powers? Good book.
Yeah, he does a lot of... All right, how many books has he released this year? Where is it? I am scrolling down. 2023. Oh, only one.
Wow. Okay. He said he put all his eggs in one basket for 2023.
Yeah. Like in the past, he's been averaging 2. It seems like for the past few years, but yeah, so only one this year.
Yeah, because I remember, like, even when I was like in the noughts, he was still sticking out like what, 10 bucks a year at that point.
I mean, yeah, he's got a lot and a lot of short stories, and he's got his Dark Tower stuff, which is the only... I need to read Dark Tower, but
I've only seen the film with McConaughey in it, and one with it is all I'll say.
Isn't Idris Elba in...
Yeah, so Elba's the gunslinger and McConaughey's the man in black.
Got it. Yeah, apparently none of the adaptations really get it right.
No, and I know they're doing a TV adaptation of it, either on Showtime or Amazon or something, which I think is, like, that's the one that people are pinning hopes on, like, oh, there's going to be money and there's going to be enough time to tell this story. But
yeah, yeah.
You know, I just totally remember that McConaughey was at the Game Awards. And
was he?
What a bizarre... Yeah, he literally came out to just announce some game that was being made by a Texan game studio. He had nothing to do with it, just apart from the fact that it was from Texas, that he pretends like he is, but, you know.
Oh. Okay.
And it was literally like he came, like you can tell like from his face, and it's like, "There's a bit of a room full of nerds here. I don't want to be out here for too long," kind of thing. So, don't know why my McConaughey sounds like Glenn Quagmire from Family Guy, but you know,
all right.
Giggity. Speaking of which, Mario,
they do their timing thing correctly.
They do.
And Toad and Luigi nearly die.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, I forgot about. Yeah, they do nearly die. That's true.
They nearly fucking die, man. But they're fine. They're all fine, and they get across, and they get their mushroom, which takes us to chapter four.
Episode for a song for Todovsky now. So Todovsky and Frog Fuchsius are both characters from the 1996 video game Super Mario RPG Legend of the Seven Stars, which people probably would have played recently because it had a remake on Switch, except Omi Todovsky kept his name. Frog Fuchsius, they just changed his name to Frog Sage because they were worried that no one in 2023 knew who Confucius was anymore.
Maybe they were worried it was racist or something. Frog Fuchsius?
Well,
I don't know.
Well, if that's the case, the frog model still has a giant Fu Manchu and speaks some broken English, so they didn't really care that much about racism.
They didn't try that hard.
That was the case.
They didn't try that hard.
No, obviously not. And no, and they kept... And I don't know, I feel like more people would get the Confucius pun more than they would the Tchaikovsky pun, but I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly. A song for Todovsky. The clue they get tells them to look where, in a place where frogs and toads live in harmony, which is Tadpole Pond.
As we all know is Tadpole Pond, yeah.
As we all know, which is where Frog Fuchsius and Todovsky live together in harmony. Get it? Harmony, because Todovsky makes music. On their way, they run into some Koopa Troopas, a pair of them. They get a little cocky. They beat up on the Koopa Troopas. They send them spiraling out. The shells come back off of a wall and hit them and knock them into a stream. But it's all good.
Yeah, because the stream is another... it's another set piece from Super Mario RPG. It's when you're rolling on the barrels. So
yeah.
There we go.
And it's a feeder stream right into Tadpole Pond. And they're okay because Frog Fuchsius is like right there when they get out of the water.
Oh, no, you see right there. To go again with how easy this adventure has been. Mario, we're on a quest to save the princess. We're looking for six magic mushrooms. We think one of them may be near here. So Luigi and Toad, they climb up on the rock trying to get them. And it's like, okay, crap. Do we need to do something? Frog Fuchsius. Oh, yeah, the magic mushroom. The item you seek is in Melody Bay.
Okay, oh, great. Yeah, I know that.
I'm glad you knew. All right, thanks. Thank you, Frog Sage. That was easy.
It's just him hitting the that was easy Office Depot button the entire adventure.
Is it Office Depot in the States? For some reason, I thought it was Staples.
Staples that did it?
Yeah, I can't remember.
I think it might have been Staples.
The Staples Easy Button. I think I only know this because I had one when I was in university.
I used to have one somewhere. It's you know, a nice but annoying little desktop thing to have.
It's like a fidget spinner. It's just cool to play with, you know.
It's cool to play with. It's cool to confirm to yourself that something's easy or not. They go around to Melody Bay and they meet with Todovsky, who's like, you can't take this mushroom. It's the thing that inspires me to write music.
Of course.
Of course. Unless, Mario, you can inspire me with this sick-ass flute chops you got. Because apparently, was it Anchorman where Will Ferrell plays the flute randomly? Or there's like some... Is it Anchorman? I can't remember.
So Anchorman 1 is just like it's either he's at his house party or he's just at a club and he is just randomly a flautist.
That's right. He just plays the flute.
Yeah, that's just his thing. And then in Anchorman 2, he keeps bringing it out now and again as well.
So Mario, much like Will Ferrell in Anchorman, just breaks out his flute and and lets
and
it rip.
And start speaking like Robert Goulet as well.
Robert Goulet.
Robert Goulet. Oh, look, a mountain goat.
The only things I know Robert Goulet from
is that
Will Ferrell's
Beetlejuice.
And Beetlejuice.
I watched Beetlejuice a couple of weeks ago and I was like, I had the IMDb extra on, it's like Robert Goulet, and so I don't remember. So I then started kept watching the Coconut Banger's ball. And Robert Guillet bit, where he kept saying the N words.
And I was like, Robert Guillet probably isn't exactly like this. And then it's just a clip from the fucking seventh, like the last TV appearance of Robert Guillet in the 80s, where it is like, I don't know whether it's because I've seen like Mr. Show and stuff like that, where it's like, I've never seen actual lounge singers, but I've seen all the Gen X people who've made jokes about lounge singers.
Right,
so
right.
Seeing Robert Goulet do that, but like genuine, where it's like, these are a few of my favorite things. I was like, how did people watch this like unironically in the 70s and 80s, you know?
Oh God, yeah. So Mario channels his inner Robert Goulet.
His Goulet, yeah.
He Goulets it, and Todosky's like, "Oh yeah, shit, yeah. The mushroom, you can have it. Take the mushroom." Yeah.
Hey, I know that you need this to stop like an invasion of ghosts, but sure, you've impressed me enough that you can have it. Thanks.
You know, if this was a video game, it would be like a. It would be like a timing thing, like a Guitar Hero. Like you gotta hit the buttons while the things are coming down from the sky.
I was thinking it'd be like a David Cage game, because it is very kind of. There's not really a lot of player input in this. It's just mostly just it is. It's just timing. So
yeah, it would be like a David Cage game, and Mario would be played by. I'm trying to think of somebody who would make sense for a David Cage Mario game.
So the only like big actor that I know that was in a I know that Elliot Page and Willem Dafoe were in Beyond Deep Souls, but then the only big get that he could get for Detroit, well, it was the guy from Altered Carbon, whose shtick seems to be I'll play an android in like anything. But also Mr. Krabs himself, Clancy Brown. He's the
Clancy Brown is literally the best character in that entire game.
Yeah, the only good bit of that game, which is the buddy cop between an android and a human, and he's the washed-up human detective who has a big dog, and he's like, this is great. It's, you know, why wasn't the whole game this?
Why wasn't the whole game just Clancy Brown doing his Clancy Brown stuff? So, yeah, it would be Clancy Brown.
Yeah, as Mario.
As Mario.
And Willem Dafoe as Luigi.
Willem Dafoe as Luigi. As the like the thick guy, thinny guy, like aesthetic.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, I guess Willem Dafoe's more of a Waluigi, isn't he, than a
He is kind of Waluigi, isn't he?
Yeah. Like he plays Waluigi in The Lighthouse, and he does. Is kind of Wario-ish, so yeah. Chapter 5, The Maze and the Mushroom.
They get a new clue, and the clue to solve it, the puzzle is jump to find the answer, and Luigi figures it out. You gotta jump it because it reads like FCOBREEL, and
you
Luigi's
have to
like,
you have to skip every second letter, which again, like if I was even at 32, I don't know how I would have figured this out. It's a bit like confusing.
Especially since it has like the at symbol in it. Did you notice that randomly the at symbol was in the middle of these?
Huh.
I don't know if that's the EPUB book version or if that was actually in the printed version too. But,
no, because I converted this to a PDF so I could annotate it. But no, it changed it back to a regular A for me. So, but no, I just double checked on the EPUB now, and that is the at symbol. So
interesting. Huh. Yeah, so it's the forest maze.
Yeah, we do the forest maze where there is a sleeping what's his face?
It's a sleeping wiggler. They try not to wake up the sleeping wiggler, and they're seemingly lost when the mushroom pouch starts glowing and leading them toward the correct path. And they find the mushroom, and it's a sparkling orange one. And they get another clue. It's a traditional text. It's just a scramble, and it's a scramble just like Mama Mario used to make, like scrambled eggs.
Yeah,
just like Mama Mario.
And they figure out that it's to go to Yoster's Isle, where all the Yoshis live. Another famous landmark from Super Mario RPG, as was Wiggler Forest as well. So yeah, if you're a fan of Mario RPG, this is the book for you.
I feel like Tracy West probably based everything on Super Mario RPG.
So that's what I think. I think that this book was probably written in like 98, and she was like, oh, Super Mario 64 hasn't got any plot in it. What's like the next? Or like, oh, I had an SNES. Oh, my kid had an SNES. Like, I'll just play the Mario game on. Oh, this has got all sorts of stuff in it. And yeah, it's funny because it's like, it's very obvious as well that Shiomi played it to a point, which is fair enough, because I only also played Mario RPG to a point, but it's a bit long. I can't be bothered with this. But yeah, like, she trails off when she gets to the Yoshi Island, and I was like, yeah, no, that's where I would trail off as well. Like,
she stopped paying attention. So, yeah. But, oh, no, there's Hammer Brothers blocking the way out, and then they're throwing hammers, and they do what they do best, and they kick the bricks that the Hammer Brothers are standing on.
The thing that the Mario Brothers are most famous for, kicking.
Kicking. And they knock the Hammer Brothers down, and then the Hammer Brothers fall and land on the sleeping Wiggler, and you know, wake up a sleeping Wiggler, and the Wiggler just wakes up and starts beating the absolute shit out of the Hammer Brothers.
But they do thank the Wiggler.
They thank the Wiggler.
They say, thanks, Wiggler, we owe you one.
We owe you one. The thing is, I don't think Mario would be very thankful if he knew that the Wiggler murdered those two Hammer Brothers.
Oh, jeez.
And then buried their bodies in the forest. And both the Hammer Brothers left behind two little Koopaling children.
Oh, shit.
Shit.
Baby Hamlet. Hamlets? Baby Hammer Brothers.
Baby Hammer Brothers.
You don't really see, the little, it's funny, you get baby Goombas in the Mario games, but you don't really get a lot of baby Koopas, which is very weird. Like, you'd think that'd be something they'd capitalize on. Because Nintendo love doing babies.
People love baby, like, reptiles and amphibians. Like, that's really what, I mean, Star Wars hit it out of the park with Grogu, you know? They're like, here's a fucking baby Yoda. It looks like a little lizard thing with ears and big eyes. And everybody's
what
like,
what do you think
Yeah.
You know, we're thinking of 2024. What do you think the next big baby character could be?
Because there's always got to be a baby character.
There always has. Every year has to have a big baby character. Like, this year, I guess, was kind of like... actually, yeah, who was the famous baby this year?
I don't know. I'd have to dive into that.
Because Oppenheimer didn't have a... I mean, Oppenheimer, I guess, had the bomb. I guess that's kind
of... The bomb's kind of a baby.
Yeah, ticking time bomb versus coughing baby. That's a famous argument. That's what Oppenheimer was all about. So yeah, we'll circle back round to famous baby. I will think on
that. Circle back round to famous babies. I mean, honestly, that's a video essay right there. That's a
That's the next H bomber guy, is it?
Yeah. H. Bomber guy.
He's going to cancel the next famous baby.
He's going to cancel the next famous baby before it's born. Because that's what anybody with a time machine would do. Kill baby Hitler.
That's true. I wouldn't kill baby Hitler. I would just be like, look, let's have a conversation here, okay? Struggle session this. Let's figure this out, you know?
Let's figure it out. What is your comp, you know?
Yes, and mein Kampf, your comp. Let's try and meet in the middle of this one.
Hey, everybody, thank you so much for listening to part one. Part two will be out next week. In the meantime, thank you so much to our patrons, Friendly Friend, Ruthless Mutter, and Jesus Loves You. Thank you so much for your patronage. And speaking of Patreon, please go to patreon.com/pixelitpod or type pixelitpod.com into your web browser, and it'll take you right over there, right into our beautiful Patreon page, where you can follow us for free, or you can join one of our tiers, $1, $5, or $10. $10 gets your name read out at the $10 gets your name read out, just like I did a few moments ago. So consider it. You can also follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Blue Sky, wherever, at Pixelit Pod. You know the drill by now. You can find James on YouTube at Hot Cider. His channel is amazing. Go check it out. He'll be back next week. Come back next week to hear the rest of the book. Thank you so much. Have a good night.